Hello, this is Kathy with the Pantograph, dated on May the 12th, and I will be reading the first half of the Pantograph to you today, starting with the very first page. ISU Community Meets at the Bird in New Plaza by Lenore Sabota. 10 years ago, a group called the ISU Traditions Council suggested bringing a statue of the ISU mascot, the Red Bird, to the ISU quad and coined the phrase, "Meet me at the bird." Thursday afternoon, a large crowd did meet at the Bird, a bronze bust of the ISU Redbird unveiled at the dedication of Redbird Plaza. Rather than taking over part of the quad, the plaza is located west of Fell Hall on University Street on the former site of Rambo House. The new location was recommended by current student leaders who resurrected the idea. After years of passing the torch, the vision of creating Redbird Plaza is fulfilled, said Lavester Johnson, Vice President for Student Affairs, who said the goal, quote, was to provide a campus landmark to unite around in times of celebration, sorrow, hope, and friendship. Ryan Powers, former student body president and outgoing student trustee, said, here at Illinois State University, students have a voice. This statue is proof of what the students can do. The plaza was a cooperative effort of the Student Government Association and the estate of Judith Jude Boyer, who retired as Vice President of Student Affairs in 2000. In addition to the bronze bust designed by Bloomington Normal artist Rick Harney, the plaza includes red bricks, a semicircular wall with built-in benches behind the bust, and park-like benches around the plaza. One of the benches has a plaque in memory of Benjamin Allison, an ISU student whose death in 2015 after being struck by a hit-and-run driver inspired an organ donation campaign. The plaque says, "To those who found a friend at ISU." The plaza also includes a semicircle on the ground in front of the statue that says, "To this emblem be true." Boyer embodies that motto more than anyone I know, said Michael Shermer, an ISU retiree who worked with Boyer for 29 years. To say she was an advocate for students is an understatement, said Shermer. This embodies the Redbird spirit we celebrate today. She was Ms. Redbird. President Larry Dietz, who started working on the idea when he was Vice President of Student Affairs, said, "We hope this dedication is just the beginning." He envisions incoming freshmen learning the ISU fight song at Redbird Plaza during their orientation. Powers said, "I'm looking forward the most to what new traditions will form organically." It didn't take long for students to start the new traditions, as several, many wearing the caps and gowns in advance of Friday's and Saturday's commencement activities, posed for photos by the Redbird bust. The costume mascot, Reggie Redbird, was present too, and became the first to rub the beak of the new statue for luck. Dietz said the new Redbird bust is 30% bigger than others on campus to accommodate the extra attention and love that it will receive in this public space. A plaque welcoming people to the plaza notes that it was inspired by Judith Jude Boyer's steadfast commitment to elevating the voice of students for more than three decades and expresses hope that the plaza will be a space that promotes education and community while serving as a unifying emblem of pride to which all Redbirds will be true. And this is a bust of a fighting redbird, so you see his pretty good size, his feathers and his top knot, and kind of a grimace on his face. I think it's the sports symbol. It's very looks like it would be very awe-inspiring. This next article on the front page says, "Groups call for public review board for the Black Lives Matter," by Maria Nagel from Bloomington. A request by the local Black Lives Matter chapter to create a community board to review public complaints about interactions with Bloomington police officers is garnering support. Four community organizations, Not in Our Town, YWCA McLean County, NAACP Bloomington Normal, and the Central Illinois chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, support Black Lives Matter Bloomington Normal in calling for a civilian review board. In a joint statement issued Thursday, the five groups said many residents, particularly people of color, lack confidence in the process for filing complaints about police officers and in investigations conducted solely by police. The Bloomington City Council plans to discuss on Monday options to improve relations between police and the community and to increase diversity in the city's public safety department, said Mayor Terry Renner. It's part of a broader discussion about what the overall concerns are, what the issues are, and what does our current process look like, and what our options are, said Renner. One, obviously, is a review board, and that certainly will be discussed. The council will meet at 5:30 p.m. Monday for a committee of the whole work session at City Hall. No action will be taken at that time. I am respectfully reserving my comments until Monday night, said Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner. I'm glad that the City Council is willing to entertain the possibility of a civilian review board, said Kai Ajayi, a member of the local BLM chapter. Black Lives Matter has shared some principles it would like to see shape the board, and hopefully at the Committee of the Whole meeting, the City Council will agree that these are good ideas and should form the basis for a board, said Ajayi. The local BLM chapter sought input about the proposed review board from four other organizations. We believe that a civilian review board working to encourage citizens to complain by providing assurances of follow-up with the complaint process would be a good starting point as we continue to work to improve police and community relations, said the organizations in their joint statement. Few public complaints are formally submitted to Bloomington Police, the group say, but that fact may be misleading. We believe it is dangerous to assume that the low number of complaints filed against officers are a measure of public satisfaction when it may instead be an indication of public distrust with our current complaint process, according to the group's statement. The organization suggests that in order to maintain public trust, the review board consists solely of volunteer members of the public to remain an impartial body. The community groups also recommend expanding the avenues for filing complaints by allowing people to file them directly with the review board, with the city's human resources department, or through the current process at the police department. While the police department would investigate the complaints and make determinations, a review board could provide an avenue for people to appeal department findings they dispute, said the organization's statement. We recommend that the BPD make all investigative material related to the complaint available to the review board, the group said. The board could make non-binding recommendations to the police chief or the city manager to consider, according to these groups. NIOT member Mike Medejeka said people may feel more comfortable taking complaints to a review board, and the review process would be more productive than having people just raise these issues in public forums. People constantly voice complaints when we have these large public forums, said Medejeka. It's really not fair to the police because they can't answer an individual situation in front of a crowd. On page A2, we have Today in History. Today is Friday, May 12th, the 132nd day of 2017. There are 233 days left in the year. Today's highlight, on May 12th, 1967, RU Experience, the groundbreaking debut album of Jimi Hendrix Experience, was released in Britain by Track Records. A version with a somewhat different playlist went on sale in the United States the following August on the Reprise label. On this date in 1780, during the Revolutionary War, the besieged city of Charleston, South Carolina, surrendered to British forces. In 1870, an act creating the Canadian province of Manitoba was given royal assent to take effect in July. In 1932, the body of Charles Lindbergh, Jr., the kidnapped son of Charles and Anne Lindbergh, was found in a wooded area near Hopewell, New Jersey. In 1937, Britain's King George VI was crowned at Westminster Abbey. His wife, Elizabeth, was crowned as Queen Consort. In 1949, the Soviet Union lifted the Berlin blockade, which the Western powers had succeeded in circumventing with their Berlin airlift. In 1957, movie director, actor Eric von Stroheim, 71, died in Maurepas, France. In 1963, Betty Miller became the first woman to fly solo across the Pacific Ocean as she landed her Piper Apache in Brisbane, Australia, having left Oakland, California on April 30th, making three stopovers along the way. In 1975, the White House announced the new Cambodian government had seized an American merchant ship, the Magallanes, in international waters. U.S. Marines gained control of the ship 3 days after its seizure, not knowing that the 39 civilian members of the crew had already been released by Cambodia. In 1982, in Fatima, Portugal, security guards overpowered a Spanish priest armed with a bayonet who attacked Pope Paul II. In 2008, the Pope's longtime private secretary revealed that the pontiff was slightly wounded in the assault. In 1992, actor Robert Reed of TV's Brady Bunch died in Pasadena, California at age 59. In 1997, Australian Susie Moroney became the first woman to swim from Cuba to Florida, covering the 118-mile distance in 24 and a half hours. In 2002, Jimmy Carter arrived in Cuba, becoming the first U.S. president in or out of office to visit since the 1959 revolution that put Fidel Castro in power. Thought for today. Sometimes there is a greater lack of communication in facile talking than in silence. And the question for Bill Flick today was, have any American men who've been to the moon also been to Bloomington Normal? And the answer is yes. Of the 24 men who have orbited the moon, at least two have appeared in Bloomington Normal. Astronaut Frank Borman aboard Apollo 8 in 1968, the first manned spacecraft to circle any celestial body other than Earth, later appeared at Illinois Wesleyan University, where he dedicated the Mark Evans Observatory. In 2000, astronaut James Lovell, who flew in Apollo 8 and Apollo 13, immortalized and played by actor Tom Hanks in the hit movie Apollo 13, was the featured speaker at the annual Evening of the Stars Gala hosted by the American Red Cross of the Heartland. From page A3, State Representative Ammons holds town hall, open to run against Davis for Congress, by Derek By. From Normal. For State Representative Carol Ammons, U.S. Representative Rodney Davis's refusal to hold a town hall meeting is personal. I am a resident of the 13th Congressional District, so I take it as an affront to me as a voter that my representative refuses to come and hear about the important issues that impact me, she said of the Taylorville Republican. Voters will make their decision about that ultimately at the polls. Ammons, a Democrat of Champaign, could be part of that decision. Last month, she formed a committee to research challenging Davis in 2018, and she's holding town hall-style listening sessions in communities across the district as part of that. I'm looking at the exploratory process as people, as numbers, as the map. All of those things go into decision-making about the 13th, she said. We have four other cities we're going to from here. We hope to be finished by mid-June, and then we'll put together an event to make an announcement. That tour continued Thursday as she spoke before about 100 people at Normal Public Library. The visit was coordinated by Indivisible Illinois 13, a liberal activist group. While Ammons answered questions, she also invited attendees to share personal stories as part of the listening session format. Early childhood education access stood out to me, she said of issues discussed. Gun violence is a very important issue, and support for people with disabilities. Attendees shared their stories about facing turning 26 and losing health insurance because of a disability. A relative who has mental health problems but can, as of this year, buy a gun, and fear of cuts to social programs under Republican President Donald Trump and a Republican Congress. We should be calling for the removal of the entire administration because it has the greatest conflict of interest I've ever seen in history, and I've read a lot of it, Ammons said of Trump. Attendees also spoke about their disappointment with Davis's support of the House-approved American Health Care Act, which critics say could result in millions losing health insurance, and with the continued lack of a state budget, which Ammons said is hurting Illinoisans with disabilities. We are not just organizing this conversation for the 13th. We have a historic governor's election that will be on the exact same ballot, she said. If we are not focused on organizing our communities to remove this governor, then we will see a historic drought beyond what we're experiencing. One candidate has already announced a plan to challenge Davis. Dylan C. Clark, a Democrat on the Montgomery County Board, which is based in Hillsboro. Actor Cole named to Hall of Fame at ISU by Lenore Sabota. Gary Cole praised the talent he found among students and faculty when he attended Illinois State University from 1974 to 1977, which he described as a critical time in his becoming an actor. His comments came on Thursday after his induction into the ISU College of Fine Arts Hall of Fame. Although, he noted, truth be told, I didn't graduate, Cole said as he learned a lot at ISU, and returning to campus brings back a lot of memories. What I remember is the extraordinary talent from both faculty and the students, he said. Dean Gene Miller said Cole's selection as the 34th alumnus in the Hall of Fame reflects his tremendous achievements and continued commitment to ISU. Cole has appeared on stage, television, and film, with credits including The West Wing, The Good Wife, and Midnight Caller on TV, and Talladega Nights, The Brady Bunch, and the cult classic Office Space in film. He was nominated for an Emmy for his current role in the HBO series Veep. Cole said Office Space wasn't a big hit on the big screen, but it took on a life of its own after its release on DVD, prompting strangers on the street to shout lines at him from the movie. "I never worked in an office because I had no discernible office skills," he said, "but I understand that culture is huge." Cole got his start in Chicago theater in 1978 with the Steppenwolf Theater Company, founded a few years before by other ISU alumni. His television career began in 1985 NBC miniseries Fatal Vision, in which he played a doctor convicted of murdering his pregnant wife and two children. Cole said he was sure he got the role after many others turned it down, but I really seized it. Working with Carl Malden, Andy Griffith, and Eva Marie Saint, Cole said, "I learned a great deal in a short period of time. When it comes to acting, the most compelling things about that to me is this," Cole said as he rubbed his fingers together, "the electricity between two people. When I was locked in with someone and all this, the audience went away. That's what I remember," he said. Cole is teaching a master class to acting majors while on campus and will be the commencement speaker for the College of Fine Arts at 7 p.m. Saturday in the Bone Student Center's Baden Auditorium. Hudson waiting for resignation from Village President by Kevin Barlow from Hudson. Jason Collins says he still plans to resign as Hudson Village President, but the Village Board had to delay action on replacing him Thursday because he has not turned in the official paperwork. "To be honest, I forgot to do it," Collins, who did not attend the board meeting, told the Pantograph on Thursday, "I have been swamped with work." Collins was appointed to the position in January 2015 after the resignation of Mark Hott, and then won the office in the April 4th election. He was sworn in May 1st, but then announced May 3rd he was resigning, telling the Pantograph it was for personal reasons. The Village Board had a special meeting Thursday to discuss the situation and had plans possibly to elect a new president, but attorney Trive Mead advised the board to hold off until the proper paperwork was received. The municipal court code requires that if a resignation creates a vacancy in the office of village president, that resignation is required to be in writing and notarized by a notary public, he said. He was transmitted a form that was prepared for him that would allow him to sign and be delivered to the village clerk. He was asked to file the form Tuesday, but has yet to file it, Mead said. As a result of that, the village still has a president of this moment, and that president is Jason Collins. Mead advised the board that until the paperwork is delivered, further action such as appointing a new president should wait. The president can be removed from office for two reasons, Mead explained. The first would be if he committed a crime that would disqualify him from being a public official, and the second would be abandonment of the office. "I have no reason to believe that Mr. Collins is under investigation for any crime," Mead told the Pantograph following the meeting. But, he said, the village board can determine that the president has abandoned the office and vote to remove him. Once the seat is vacant, a vote would be taken among the current trustees to elect a new president. If all six trustees were to decline the position, the board could look to appoint a resident of Hudson to the post. None of the trustees expressed immediate interest in the position on Thursday night. A meeting has been scheduled for May 25th, when the board is expected to fill other positions, such as police chief and village attorney, at that meeting. ISU's solar car team extends fund drive. The group nears the goal of $5,000 to buy batteries. The Illinois State University solar car team is more than halfway to its goal of raising $5,000 for new, more efficient batteries and has decided to extend its campaign by 2 weeks. Physics professor Dan Holland, the team's advisor, said Thursday that over $3,000 has been raised, but momentum seems to be building. Team President Brian Warner, a senior in accounting from McHenry, said Thursday the fundraising effort has been promoted on social media. "We're hoping that as people come back to campus for graduation, word will get around, prompting more donations," he said. The campaign is scheduled to end May 24th. The team is using a crowdfunding platform on the university's website to finance replacing its current lithium-ion batteries with more efficient, lighter-weight lithium-sulfur batteries. Those wishing to donate can go to https://hatch.ilstu.edu/project/6312. The batteries will be used in the car to be known as Mercury 6, which will compete in next year's American Solar Challenge and Formula Sun Grand Prix. That car is currently in the design stage using special computer models for aerodynamic testing. Holland said someone from Bradley University recently stopped by to help the team with that process. Warner said, "We're going to have students on campus over the summer to start working on the molds for Mercury 6. New guidelines for next year's race require the team to build a replacement for Mercury 5," he explained. Holland thinks Mercury 6 will be the team's most efficient car ever. Mercury 5, the same car used last year, is pretty much ready to go for this year's track only Formula Sun Grand Prix, said Warner. An on-road race takes place in alternating years, and ISU has struggled at times with that race. However, it has done well in the track-only race, finishing second in 2011 and 13 and third in 2015. This year's track race takes place July 3rd through the 8th in Austin, Texas. Warner has said previously, "We're hoping for another podium." That is by Lenore Sobota. And on page A4, VA chief shares Obama-era goal, Shulkin, lowering homeless rate, a long-term target, by Jennifer McDermott from Providence, Rhode Island. The new Veterans Affairs chief shares the goal set by former President Barack Obama's administration of ending homelessness among veterans, but says it will take longer than his predecessor predicted. Reducing the number of homeless veterans nationwide from roughly 40,000 to 10 or 15,000 is an achievable goal for President Donald Trump's administration, VA Secretary David Shulkin told the Associated Press during a visit to Rhode Island last week. "This is a continuous problem of people finding themselves in economically difficult situations and then being out on the street or going from shelter to shelter," Shulkin said. Homelessness among veterans has been effectively ended in Virginia, Connecticut, and Delaware, and in more than 40 communities. The outgoing head of the VA, Robert McDonald, said in January, "We should be there nationwide within a couple of years." Shulkin, who formerly was VA Undersecretary of Health under Obama, said on Friday, "We're still looking at a multi-year process." While advocates are encouraged to hear Shulkin's commitment, some wish he was more ambitious. "My personal take is the VA secretary is being cautiously optimistic about what can be achieved and not wanting to kind of set the administration up for a missed goal," said Lisa Vukoff, who works to prevent and end homelessness in Omaha, Nebraska area. "I am a firm believer in setting your goals big because you achieve more that way." U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Connecticut Democrat, said that veteran homelessness can be ended during the Trump administration. "There's no reason we can't achieve it if enough resources are dedicated to the fight," said Blumenthal, a member of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. Shulkin said some veterans offered housing by the VA prefer other alternatives, and high real estate prices and a shortage of available housing in some parts of the country make it hard to house veterans there. He sees the biggest challenge in Los Angeles. Democratic Mayor Eric Garcetti said that homelessness in Los Angeles is a long-term crisis, but that the city has housed more than 8,000 veterans since 2014, and he is fighting to ensure all veterans have a safe place to call home. Los Angeles voters approved a bond in November to raise $1.2 billion for up to 10,000 permanent units. And returning to page A1, on this page, Boy Scouts to lose older Mormon youth. Church says, gay leaders not the cause of the decision to start a new program. Brady McCombs. The Mormon Church, the biggest sponsor of Boy Scout troops in the United States, announced Thursday it is pulling as many as 185,000 older youth from the organization as part of an effort to start its own scouting-like program. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints said the move wasn't triggered by the Boy Scouts' decision in 2015 to allow gay troop leaders, since Mormon-sponsored troops have remained free to exclude such adults on religious grounds. But at least one leading Mormon scholar said that the Boy Scouts and the Church have been diverging on values in recent years, and that the policy on gays was probably a contributing factor in the split. Saying it wants a new, simplified program of its own that is more closely tailored to Mormon teenagers, the church announced that boys ages 14 to 18 will no longer participate in the Boy Scouts starting next year. The church said the decision will affect 185,000 teens. The Boy Scouts put the number at 130,000. The loss is only a fraction of the 2.3 million youth in the Boy Scouts of America, but the organization has been grappling with declining membership for years and has enjoyed an unusually close bond with the Mormon Church for more than a century because of their shared values. Joining the Boy Scouts is practically automatic among Mormon boys. Boy Scouts of America spokeswoman Effie DeLaMarcos said the organization is saddened by the decision, but understands the church's desire to customize a program. About 280,000 Mormon boys ages 8 to 13 will remain in the Scouts while the church develops its program, the Mormon said. The Boy Scouts estimate their number at 330,000. Did not say when the younger boys will be withdrawn from the Boy Scouts. Like other conservative faiths, the Mormon Church opposes gay marriage and teaches that being in a homosexual relationship is a sin. The church initially said it was deeply troubled by the Boy Scouts' policy change on gays, but stayed with the organization after receiving assurances it could appoint troop leaders according to its own religious and moral values. In Thursday's announcement, the church said that it learned recently that the Boy Scouts are considering admitting girls, but its decision was made independent of that. Matthew Bowman, a Mormon scholar and history professor at Henderson State University, said the schism reflects the two organizations' diverging values, with gays and girls among the issues on which they are moving apart. The church is wedded very much to traditional gender roles, and they see the Boy Scouts of America increasingly move away from that, Bowman said. That means they have to come to see it as a less of a hospitable place. Thursday's announcement represents a first step towards something that has been in the works for years, a Mormon-run scouting-type program that could be used in congregations around the world. The church has 15.8 million members, nearly 6 in 10 of them outside the U.S. and Canada. Scouting is available only in the U.S. and Canada. The long game here is the church looking forward to a time when Americans are even more of a minority in the church than they are now, Bowman said. Mormon teenagers who want to continue working toward the Eagle Scout rank will be able to do that on their own while also participating in the new program, said church spokesman Eric Hawkins. The Boy Scout movement has been entrenched in Mormon culture for as long as anyone can remember. In 2013, the church put on an extravagant theatrical production inside its 21,000-seatatorium in Salt Lake City to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the faith's alliance with the Boy Scouts. A Boy Scout training complex in West Virginia is named after Mormon Church President Thomas S. Monson, a longtime member of the Boy Scouts executive board and a major supporter. Charles Dahlquist, the second, a Mormon, holds the top volunteer position with the Boy Scouts. Becoming an Eagle Scout is an especially proud badge of honor within Mormon culture. Many Utah lawmakers listed on their resumes. Social media was buzzing with jokes on Thursday about Mormon women adjusting their hopes of finding a husband who was an Eagle Scout. Also on the front page, Trump, I was firing Comey regardless, by Julie Pace, Eileen Sullivan, and Jake Pearson. Undermining previous White House explanations, President Donald Trump declared Thursday he had planned to fire FBI Director James Comey all along, regardless of whether top Justice Department officials recommended the stunning decision. His assertions came as Comey's temporary replacement joined in, contradicting other administration statements on the snowballing controversy. In an interview with NBC News, Trump also said he'd asked Comey point blank if he was under investigation, showing no concern about the prospect of interfering in an active FBI probe. He said Comey told him three times, at a dinner and in two phone calls, that he was not. As the Bureau probed his presidential campaign's ties to Russia's election meddling, I said, if it's possible, would you let me know I'm under investigation? He said, you are not under investigation, Trump told NBC. The shifting accounts of the decision to fire Comey, whom Trump derided as a showboat and grandstander, added to a mounting sense of uncertainty and chaos in the West Wing, as aides scrambled to get their story straight and appease an angry president. Not even Vice President Mike Pence was spared the embarrassment of having told a version of events that was later discredited by Trump. The White House's explanations continued to crumble throughout the day Thursday. On Capitol Hill, acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe strongly disputed the White House's assertion that Comey had been fired part because he had lost the confidence of the FBI's rank and file. And there's a little more in this article, which we can continue with on the next half. This is Kathy signing off for the first half of the Pantograph for Friday, the 12th of May.